We're back. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor, publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, and a man of deep thoughts. This is the 356th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk what we're investing in. We're going to talk some of the crazy stuff going on, fourth turning stuff, spoiler alert. The second edition or the second round of the fourth turning book, the updated edition, warns of, you know, when we're getting to the point where governments are no longer sustainable because of their fiscal and monetary lunatic approaches to fiscal and monetary policy, that you can look for the taxing to commence. The taxing is most definitely commencing. We'll get into that both on the local and the national level. I'm sure Nick will want to share a story, but beforehand, and before we get to all of that, another crazy week. Nick, how are you and your beautiful family doing?
Everybody's doing great. Gerardo, busy week, basketball games. We're getting a new puppy, in fact, after this podcast. Maybe he'll make an appearance at some point, a duck retrieving dog. As you know, I lost an implant in my tooth, in my mouth. I'm learning about that with my dentist and oral surgeon, and the markets have been absolutely crazy. So we've got plenty to talk about in terms of volatility. I know you had a busy week with a marriage of your son this weekend, which you're hosting. So how goes it with you?
Excited. Look, again, I'm thankful and privileged on so many fronts that, you know, you look at, you know, there was a shooting in Michigan at a synagogue today, which is deplorable. The things going on in Iran, you know, deplorable. Both sides, casualties that are unnecessary, in my opinion. And you just look around the world, and there's like a lot to just kind of, you know, wince at and disagree with. And you know, I have to take moments sometimes, like I have this week, just kind of look inward and stay grounded and look around and be really thankful at you know, what should be a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Met the in-laws yesterday. They were fantastic. I'll be officiating, as you know, my oldest son's wedding. So that's an honor and a privilege. We're all healthy. So there's a lot of good in the world, right? He's got friends coming in from all over the world, China and Japan and the friends from Puerto Rico and Chicago. And, you know, I look at all that and all of that gives me hope, right? All of that gives me hope that, you know, there's still a lot of good in the world and that sometimes you just got to stay grounded and make sure that you're creating a community that inspires that and hopefully multiplies a lot of that good that exists. So long-winded way of saying, I'm excited for the weekend. I'm excited for, you know, per usual, every day that we're up and at it and healthy and get a chance to try to make a small difference, even if it's within our own tribes. And here we are.
Yes, sir. There's, like I said, no shortage of things to talk about. There was a comment last week, and thanks again to Mr. Rudy Havenstein for coming on, about how, you know, most people, sort of like you said, you're turning inward and you're looking for things to be thankful for. The commenter was saying something along the lines of, most people don't, you know, want to know or aren't interested in or can't handle, like, you know, you can't handle the truth. You know what I mean? Like, people,
yeah,
can't,
that's one of the best lines ever.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether it's the Epstein entanglement or geopolitics or war or local politics or congressional senatorial politics, presidential politics, you know, a lot of people just do what I replied to the comment and I said, you know, there's a theory or there's a known name for that. It's called the ostrich technique or the ostrich approach, where you just put your head in the sand, right? And this is like a documented technique, yeah, that people do. They just avoid and ignore the news. And I guess that's fine on one part, but you and I aren't wired that way. And I don't think the viewers of our podcast are wired that way, especially because we're business owners and employees and tax paying citizens. A lot of people don't pay taxes, Gerardo. I don't know if you know that, but so we care about where our money actually goes. I know that the wealthy don't pay their fair share in this world, but I keep hearing that a lot, but I like to know like where my money is going. And so, and some of it pisses me off, and especially because the folks levying and enforcing those taxes are doing their own nefarious things, which we continue to hear about. And that's why this is a bizarro world.
Yeah, no, well said, well put. We'll get into all the bizarroness, no shortage. We'll get into some of it, I should say. But Let's start with the volatility in the markets. Both you and I have documented this week how, look, we sound like broken records, but the broken records have been, it's been profitable broken records. And so we're going to go through some of that again. Gold pulling back below the $5,100 level, $5,084 the last time I checked, and I'll give you a live check in $5,088 right now. Silver below $85, copper at $5.84 on the spot price. I'll get into crude and rates in just a second, but thoughts on the gold, silver, and copper bull market? Still bullish, technically?
Yeah, nothing's changed in the past 3 weeks. The levels haven't changed at all. All the levels you just quoted there are at the low end of what Keith McCullough would call the risk range, right? I mean, gold could go 5,000 to 5,300. Silver can go sort of 80 to 95. Yeah. Copper can go mid fives to just above six. They're all still bullish. You started that question with volatility, which is really the thing I should talk about. And I've said it a bunch, but when the volatility goes up, and not just the VIX, the price swings are wider. So there's not much to do. Like, you should be sitting on your hands for the most part. I was writing about it in Underground Alpha today. Like, this is how you get whipsawed. This is how you get caught offside. This is how you end up chasing. Because something that dips one day, with volatility this high can surge the next, and vice versa, right? Like, oil's having wild swings. Like I just said, gold can move $300. And so you don't want to, unless you're a trader, which I'm not and have never pretended to be, you don't really want to do a lot of things. You don't want to panic buy. You don't want to panic sell. Going back to price levels and knowing what you own, the only thing you should be doing is using the volatility to see if there's any long-term entry points you want to make to the long side. The other thing I think I want to talk about is like profiting from this. In my younger days, I would have been all about like, you know, oh, oil's at 100. Let's see if we can get in like a leveraged oil ETF or, you know, some of the stuff you hear about on CNBC or that gets the most clicks on Twitter. But what I've learned and what experience and gray hair gets you is that like, and I talked to my buddies about this too, especially during like the crypto run in 2020 and 2021. It's like, yeah, I own Bitcoin, but like, I'm not going to put enough of my wealth in any one thing for it to make a difference. Like, I'm not going all in on Bitcoin, and like, I'm not going all in on long oil because we're bombing Iran. Like, that's not how portfolio construction and successful long-term investing works. It sounds great from talking heads in the networks, and it gets clicks when you write about oil surges to $100 and you could have made X percent on this ETF. Like, that's great. But like,
everybody's an oil expert now and a geopolitical genius.
Unless you knew, which some people clearly did, and we could talk about that later. Unless you knew when the bombs were going to fly, you couldn't have pre-positioned in oil. Unless you knew, you know, the day and what was going to happen. All you can do is operate within your framework and process. And that's what we've been talking about. And one more thing is some of the stuff in the markets, like the market knows things, right? It doesn't know that bombs are going to fly in Iran on February 28th. But it does know that oil is starting to perk up. It does know that volatility is coming. And some of that doesn't have to do just with war per se. You know, my Friday issue of the Foundational Profits for March isn't out yet. But what I've been writing about is just that. Like, we started buying some oil stocks back in January and February, and it wasn't because I wasn't writing then, I think Trump's going to bomb Iran, so we're going to buy some oil stocks. I was writing like, you know, oil is starting to go up. There's a rotation in the market. The XLE is starting to lead, whereas before tech stocks were starting to lead. Like, that's real analysis and investing. The other stuff is sort of betting and reacting. So I'm pretty content and happy and confident with how my portfolio is positioned. It hasn't gone up every day for the past 2 weeks like it had been doing in January and February, but at the same time, it hasn't gone down as much as the broader markets and is certainly outpacing the returns of the broader markets year to date. And that comes back to a process and good portfolio construction. So to answer your question directly, volatility is hugely elevated, especially on the oil side of things. So I should parse it out. Sorry for the long answer. Volatility isn't just the VIX. And sorry if I've talked about this a bunch in previous episodes, but we've been doing this for 6 or some years now. So topics come up again. Individual assets and exchanges have their own volatility. Like there's a volatility of the NASDAQ, and there's gold volatility, and there's oil volatility, and there's bond volatility. And what we're seeing is escalated volatility across all those asset classes right now, especially in oil. So if the VIX is at 25 or 26, which it is, and if gold volatility, and these are all on the same scale, by the way, if gold volatility is at 30, which it is, that's elevated, right? Because gold volatility and the VIX were at like 20 or below to start the year. Oil volatility is at 122. And the only other time oil volatility has been above 120 was back during COVID when the price of oil went negative. It didn't even, and I was fresh at the desk.
Those were the days, Nick.
Happy sixth anniversary to 2 weeks to slow the spread. That's actually this weekend.
Who's president during the COVID lockdowns?
Mr. Trump. He signed the first.
That was a Democrat thing.
No, sir. People's memories get skewed, but he signed the first checks too that kicked off the inflation that went to 8%. That's now come down to 3%. But I digress. The only other time oil was had this sort of volatility was what I just said in COVID, and then before that, 2007, 2008, when oil went to $150, and I was brand new on the desk and didn't know nothing from nothing. So, and you're seeing, you know, a relatively unprecedented levels of oil volatility, and that's thanks to your government. But anyway, all that to say, there's not a lot to do, especially if you were positioned well before all this kicked off.
Well, listen, government taketh and the government giveth and government taketh away, right? The IEA, the International Energy Agency,
administration,
whatever, who cares what their name is? They're all the same thing. All the alphabet people have similar feelings for the most part. But, you know, it decided to intervene because oil was up some 35%. In one day, it was as high as $117.
You're correct.
There you go. Again, still doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong. It's the same group. It wasn't the point. The point is, in all its wisdom, it decided that 117 was too much, too quick. So they all got together and decided they were going to release 400 million barrels of oil from their reserve to stabilize the markets. And so what the markets did... And somebody front ran that, by the way, and made tens of millions of dollars. But that's another conversation for another day. For later. Immediately, the price started dropping and it went from 117 and closed that day to like $85. The universe said, we don't believe you and go ahead and release those 400 million barrels of oil. That might buy you a few weeks and maybe a month or maybe a month and a half. But the market, the dollar index, the volatility index, and the price of oil are telling you they don't believe this war ends anytime soon, because oil went back to 84 and it's sitting there at $97 right now, 96.53, heading into a weekend where, you know, the news reports are that after, and again, I am no Gaddafi proponent. I was very, very vocal. I wasn't very, very vocal, but we were vocal, especially after we were at BRIC, that the people of Iran want independence. They are tired of oppression from their own government, that the government has been brutal to its own people. So fuck that guy. And you know, fuck the way he's oppressed his own people. I'm for freedom of all people. I love all people, wherever they're from. I think everybody should have an opportunity for upward mobility and freedom, right? But look, the bottom line is his successor was his son, who just saw his father, his mother, his niece, his uncle, his aunt blown up. And he's half the age of the guy that they blew up initially. He's supposed to be in a coma now with his leg blown off. But you replace one Khomeini with another Khomeini, and this guy is supposed to be more of a hardliner with a bigger chip on his shoulder. So simultaneously, the Iranian forces are saying, we welcome a ground war. We've been wanting a ground war. That's the one place where you can't defeat us. I don't know whether it's true or not. Everybody knows I love our military. I have a lot of friends that, you know, are in the military. I have an acquaintance that's over there right now in the Middle East. Don't want to see anything escalate, but they are clearly game for a ground war. And the market is saying this doesn't end anytime soon, folks. And so I know what the TV will tell you. I know what the Secretary of War, whatever he calls himself, the Lord of the Skies. I don't know what he calls himself nowadays, but you know, he'll tell you that it was going to be 2 weeks and then 4 weeks, now maybe 8 weeks, and now maybe September. The market surely is telling us that this is going to not end anytime soon. That means volatility is going to remain elevated. And back to your point, Nick, about sometimes the best thing is doing nothing. Look, some of my bigger positions have fallen back 20, 30% from recent highs, some 40% from recent highs. That's not a problem. The thesis is still in place. The reason why I bought all of those companies and have large holdings in each of those companies is I want to see value added by the drill bit. Each one of those companies has the treasury to execute that. Each one of those companies has a commodity trend that's favorable for it. And all I need is those companies to execute and go find the stuff that is in demand and will continue to be in demand, not just for this quarter, not just through this war, not just for 2026, for the foreseeable future. If I get a couple of those right, and so far so good, even after the pullback, it's going to be okay, folks. And so when I look at that, yes, if I have to trim a position a bit because I have a tax bill or a wedding to pay for or whatever the case may be, sure, I trim a position and I do it evenly across, you know, the portfolio. But I don't own, you know, 30 stocks. It's not the way I approach the game. I like to make, you know, substantial bets in anywhere between 6 to 12 companies. And I prefer closer to 6 than 12, and let the thesis play out and trim when I have to. So that allows me to sleep well at night. That allows me to look at a day where a stock could be down 20% and understand that nothing has changed in the overall commodity market, the underlying commodity, the trend of that. And then I just follow up with the companies to make sure everything's in place for them to execute. If I still check all those boxes, the 20%, you know, retrace and drawdown is temporary. And that's par the course in the junior resource sandbox that I play in.
Yeah, it's very macro led. So you deal in tinier speculations, the junior end of the spectrum. And the thesis, as you say, is still intact, right? The need for copper, the need for nickel, the need for uranium, the debt when it comes to gold, and then the geopolitics when it comes to gold. Yeah. It's the overall, you know, macro dog that's wagging the resource tail right now. But just look at oil as a microcosm, and that still applies to the rest of the resource market. Like the Strait of Hormuz, what's it, 20% of global oil passes through the Strait of Hormuz. Technically, the U.S. is self-sufficient in oil now, right after we developed the Bakken and stuff. And yet, West Texas Intermediate is at 100. You know, no West Texas Intermediate goes through the Strait of Hormuz, goes through fucking Texas.
Correct.
And so, anyway.
But guess which part of Texas, folks? Okay. Some of this stuff writes itself.
But the precariousness of that strait and how it applies to Brent oil and the oil that comes out of the Middle Eastern nations, you know, that thesis, you can apply that to the metals. There's a gentleman, Alex Molyneux, who was, I forget if he was chairman of Azarga or he was involved in Azarga somehow, but he very big in
large shareholder for sure.
In uranium and vocal on Twitter. You know, he was writing, it's not just oil that goes through the Strait of Hormuz, like sulfur and other chemicals go through there as well, including
fertilizer prices are up 30% for farmers. Yeah.
100%. But yeah, like leaching materials that are needed for African uranium mines, for example. Like this is like second and third order thinking. But he was tweeting this week that, and he wasn't saying it could be, but it was an open question, right? Like, could this be a Cigar Lake flooding moment for uranium if Namibia can't get the, you know, the leaching solutions it needs for its uranium mines, etc. So the critical resource, the natural resource bull market is still well intact, and the thesis is only strengthened in my mind.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think people mistake, and we've talked about this before, the economy, which, look, we have a higher than expected inflation number here recently, lower than expected jobs number here recently. All of those things don't, you know, bode well for inspiring confidence in the everyday American. We talked about fertilizer prices being up some 30%. That's consequential for farmers in Iowa and the Midwest and, you know, people that, and everywhere, people that rely on inputs to be fixed or at least close to fixed, and all of a sudden have a variable of 30 to 40%. that hits home in very, very consequential ways for people. That translates into higher prices at the grocery store. You then go fill up your gas tank to get to the grocery store. California, it's $8. Said diesel in Washington State is running $6 right now. Again, in an era, in a time where like half of America doesn't have $1,000 in savings, that depletes your purchasing power really, really quickly. So I am not surprised that the oil agency decided that it was going to go ahead and release 400 million barrels, the IEA. I'm also not surprised that President Trump is out right now begging Jerome for a rate cut. Not at the next meeting. He said today, thank you for your attention to this matter. You're not going to get it, buddy. I think, you know, like, it's just not going to happen. He's on his way out. He knows it. Sure in the heck is it ruining his legacy any more than he already has. On Mr. Trump's behalf, who obviously doesn't have the best of relations with Mr. Powell. So a lot of moving parts. Volatility is here to stay. Sometimes the best thing is to do nothing. Ask yourself, folks, if the premise why you bought a stock is still intact. If it is, you ride out that volatility and let the market get back to being stable. Overall,
who appointed Mr. Powell?
Again, right? Yeah, the guy, Mr. Trump. Like, who's the guy that keeps intervening and doesn't want to prosecute Fauci, according to a lot of the staff members? The Rand Paul has said, you know, I keep calling for the prosecution of Fauci for the lies and for the lockups during the Trump administration. And the administration keeps pushing back. There's something there they don't want us to see. There were more Epstein files released, by the way. Some of that stuff continues to be nasty. A whole lot. It's a lot. DHS, head of DHS, Kristi Noem is out. It wasn't, you know, all the other stuff. It was that $220 million that she put on Trump, saying that, you know, he approved a 60-second commercial that cost $220 million. Then she gets in front of our lawmakers and says that, yes, it was him that approved it. And that, yes, the corporation that got the no-bid contract was created 8 days before. And that, no, she didn't know where it was stationed because it doesn't have a headquarters. And that, yes, maybe her side piece, Mr. Corey Lewandowski or whatever the heck his name is, maybe he did or did not have a hand in structuring some of those contracts. It's nasty and corrupt on both sides, folks. But $220 million for a 60-second ad is again, it's just spitting in your face of taxpayers like yourself, like myself. Then you got to go home, Nick. And I know this will be litigated, but you got to go home in Washington State to your beautiful home. And here you are. You're a Wall Street tycoon again. You better pay your fair share, Nick. What's the new proposal in Washington State that's being passed around now? Because you are working too hard and doing too well, and you need to pay your fair share, Nick.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to touch on fertilizer and stuff, but we can go there. Sure. So
now we can go back. You have a lot of land and you live next to farmers. So I think it ties in beautifully.
Well, I mean, just fertilizer prices are up. I mean, even for like, you know, Scott stuff that you put on your lawn in the spring. I went and bought the bag for my lawn the other day. It was $100 for the big bag, right? And I remember tweeting about it a year or two ago, and it was like $60 or $70 about how egregiously expensive it was. And here it is up to $100 a bag. And this was 2 or 3 weeks ago before the most recent spike. You were going to talk about the indices, and you were talking about the jobs numbers. And yeah, again, like, the war is a symptom, right? The war isn't the driver. Like, the economy Correct. Was already slowing. Like, inflation was already going
Correct.
set to go back up, right? This just exacerbates it, right? Like, these higher prices are going to further slow the economy, etc. And we've been talking about this for a couple of months or a month and a half about the sector rotation and how the tech stocks weren't leading and this and the other thing. And this latest battle in what I've been calling the forever war is, you know, just another symptom. It's just going to exacerbate that inflation. It's going to go back closer to 3 now. Consensus is sort of 2.8. We just got the print yesterday for February. It was 2.4%, something like that. And the next print's going to be 2.8, 2.9% on a monthly CPI basis. So, and that affects the market. That's like the macro inputs that the market cares the most about. And that's why it's been oscillating. That's why volatility has gone up. And it's why the S&P is now negative for the year as we head halfway through March. And yeah, your taxes are going to continue to rise. I'm glad you brought up the fourth turning book, because I had forgotten about that a little bit. Not the fourth turning or the book, but that, you know, one of the major takeaways was like, you're going to get taxed because the government is out of money. They keep spending, they keep raising the debt, and they keep spending money on stuff. And they've got no way to pay for it, right? That's one of the sort of the main underpinnings of the precious metals bull market. And it's never enough. Like, I just got my property tax bill here, and it's $14,000, Gerardo, like for the year, $14,000. And that's up. I remember when I bought the place, it was like $9,000 or $10,000. That was 8 years ago. So it's up 50% in 8 years. Like, that's not sustainable. And just set aside all the other stuff about property tax that isn't fair and just, especially for elders and seniors that have long paid off their houses at lower valuations. It's only going to keep going up. And I see the breakdown. This much is going to schools, and this much going to roads, this much going to paying off prostitutes or whatever they spend the money on and in the government. And it's like, that's not going to slow down either. Like, every time I get a new ballot from, you know, Spokane County when it's election year, there's always a new levy on there, right? Let's increase the property tax for the kids, for the school. Like, that's not going to slow down. And what you were referring to in the question that you asked is, we've now, just as of this week, passed a income tax in Washington state, which, and the new governor, Bob
Ferguson, only for special people,
said he wasn't going to implement, and then said he was only going to implement it under certain conditions, like if they lowered sales taxes or we had a sales tax holiday and some other things, which didn't make it into the bill. And then, I mean, you know, all the things, man, like 60,000 people showed up to or wrote in to oppose the bill, functions exponentially higher than the people that supported the tax. They don't care. Republicans wanted an amendment that it could never apply to non-millionaires. They didn't include that, of course, because it's going to apply to non-millionaires in very short order.
Who voted on this, Nick?
Nobody voted on this. So
exactly. Just they didn't even let y'all vote, man.
Just the state Congress and the state legislature, the state Congress and Senate, because the last several times it's gone on the ballot, it's lost because the people know that they don't want to implement a tax. So it applies to millionaires. It applies, you get a 1 million exemption, and then everything above a million, you're paying 9.9% on, right? So, and they even put an amendment on the bill that you can't vote on it. Like, it's not gonna, you can't make it come up for an election. You can't make it a ballot initiative. Like, that's part of the bill, man. And so, what
happened? The will of the people must be done.
The will of the people must be done. I mean, the state constitution says that you can't have a graduated income tax or an income tax that applies to certain people or certain levels of income and not others. And that's 100% what this is. They're going to try the semantics game, which, I'm so local, but it applies ubiquitously because, like you said, taxes are going to have to rise, or they're going to try to make them rise across the board. A couple of years ago, they implemented a capital gains tax. And they got around the state constitution saying no income taxes by saying, oh, that's not income. It's not an income tax. It's an excise tax. That's how they got around that a couple of years ago, went all the way to the state Supreme Court, stacked by Jay Inslee and Democrats, right? So, of course, they ruled in the favor.
It's not a war. It's an excursion.
Exactly. Semantics. Orwellian 1984 language games, right? And in this one, they're saying, oh, it's not income. It's property. And so anyway, it'll get litigated. It'll go through the courts. We'll see what happens. But yeah, they passed an income tax, and already you're seeing an exodus, right? Like, the very day that it got voted on and passed, Howard Schultz, former CEO of Starbucks, famous Seattle beanery,
kind of founder of Starbucks.
Yes, sir. He left.
Kind of founder.
He went to Florida along with all the other billionaires that recently fled California for Texas and Florida. And you know what? I take issue with him as well, because this gentleman isn't a conservative. This is a gentleman who, if you remember, was going to run in the 2020 election. He was going to throw his hat into the ring as an independent, but he's not an independent. He's a He's a liberal. I mean, he's sure. a Democrat. Jay Inslee was chummy with him, and Jay Inslee, the former governor of Washington State, was encouraging him to run as a Democrat, saying, don't split the ticket. So this isn't some guy who has been out here for a long time, like arguing against the income tax. And this is the problem with that. I don't even know what to call it. The cabal, right? The billionaire political cabal. Like, he can just up and leave, even though he's been a Democrat in the state, right? Yep. He can just take his family office to Florida because he has
now the pay means, taxes no more
because he has the means to do so. Leave his foundation here in Washington, which he says he's doing, and just be done with it. But someone who is right on the threshold, who's got roots here with kids that are now in, you know, first, second, fourth grade, who is, you know, teeters on that $1 million a year income level on some years, depending on, you know, how it was in the market, et cetera, is sort of trapped because it doesn't make sense for me to leave and, you know, buy another property. Yeah. And when I run the math on that, it probably isn't going to make sense for me to do that, right? To expand more capital to buy another property. And it greatly affects those who are considering starting businesses or moving to the state. So what this really affects is the builders, the entrepreneurs, the investors, the folks that are the employers and the growth engine of the local Washington state economy. And it's going to go down the ladder, right? There's a reason that they refuse to include a provision in the bill that says it can never go under a million income threshold. It's because they're going to lower it in a couple of years, right?
There's a reason why they don't let you vote on it.
Correct.
And look, mm-hmm. and I'm going to tie it into women's reproductive rights, right? It's the same outrage that you should have about politicians and governments just being able to decide against the people's will who does and doesn't get taxed is just as hypocritical to me as government and politicians presenting healthcare options to the country that they don't have to abide by, right? They get a special plan because they're special. They're elected. They're elected by you, whether Democrat or Republican. They all get access to the same plan, folks. You'll never get access to that plan. Not under this group of politicians on both sides. Women's reproductive rights. That don't apply to rich people. Like, your side piece got pregnant and she wants to get an abortion and she can't do it in Texas. Or maybe it's not your side piece. Maybe it's your wife that got pregnant and she's having like a complicated pregnancy that requires the termination of the baby. Well, that doesn't apply to rich people. They just jump on a plane and go to the state next door where that law doesn't apply. All of this stuff is only for those that can't afford to do those types of things. So I think that goes back to the point you were making with Howard Schultz, right? You preach one philosophy, and you preach one, and I'm not saying he was behind or is not behind this. I don't know his position on it, but I know his politics, right? And his politics dictate that there should be a broad social safety net, which is what this millionaire's tax is being sold as, right? We can't afford to continue to provide all these things that, by the way, the people don't want to provide, and the people it's being provided to largely don't want provided to them. You talked about the homeless programs and the amount of money that was spent there locally. And I hate getting into local politics, but I know so much of it because you and I talk every day. And the amount of people that signed up for it, you said were zero, right? And then they went ahead and didn't overturn the law that had already passed, meaning people wanted them to clean this stuff up. And now you get this thing here where they're deciding who they want to tax and not tax. It's not the will of the people.
State, right? That they try to cement their power. You know, people like handouts. People say, "Oh, they're going to take from these financial villains, and they're going to lower my taxes, or they're going to give me free lunch, or they're going to do whatever it is." Right? I think the families are getting like $1,200 a year. I'd have to go and read the fine print, but yeah, they create the dependent voting class, right, and entrench their power. Which back to 1984 is the ends. It's not the means. The power is the end, right? And they try to solidify that through tax and other policy. Funny, not funny about the abortion. You know, I always talk about moving to wherever, Alaska, Wyoming, Texas, wherever, sort of facetiously, right? Because we got roots here now and I can afford to pay the taxes, obviously. But I look, believe you me, I look and I see where we could potentially go to and where the benefits are. And my first choice before we came to Washington was Wyoming, but
yeah,
my wife didn't want to go to Wyoming to start a family. And I respect that.
Sure.
And I was talking about Wyoming earlier this week and she was like, did you see they just passed a more restrictive abortion bill in Wyoming? And I hadn't seen it. I hadn't read it. And I was like, no, but I don't need an abortion. Like, what does it matter? I was joking, right? And she was like, she was like, yeah, but what about our two young daughters? Like, what if, like, well, you just said, what if, God forbid, something happens where, you know, they might need that. And I said, I didn't say we're rich, but I said, you just go to the other state. Like, that doesn't apply to us. Like, there's a way around that one for sure, right? And it's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, this is the optimist in me speaking now, folks. I do believe that a little bit at a time, I do believe that more and more Americans are starting to see through this stuff, right? I actually do believe that Donald Trump went to campaign against Thomas Massie because he hates Thomas Massie because Thomas Massie wants to know who raped kids. Imagine that, right? And if Trump didn't rape kids, then he's got nothing to worry about. If his friends rape kids, you should get better friends. We'll talk about the gentleman, and I hate to call him that. Let's call him the assholes from Florida, the Alexander brothers that were convicted, that were also in the Epstein files, that happened to run in that social circle with, you know, Ivanka and Trump and Jared Kushner and all of that. But, you know, Trump went to Kentucky to campaign for the guy that AIPAC is donating, outspending Massie 3-1. Like, they are... every dollar they can throw to try to get Massie out of there, they're throwing it. Trump spent some time and went over there to campaign for him. Immediately after the campaign, Massie picked up 10 to 15 points, depending on the pollsters that you believe. That is people, local people voting their local interests saying, you can't, it's on me, and call it rain anymore. At least not in Kentucky, at least not when it comes to Thomas Massie. And again, like with all politicians, I have things that we disagree with socially and on certain policy tied around immigration. But I understand the viewpoint and it's based on rationale and logic. I don't believe it's ill intention. And I know for a fact that it's not inspired by foreign money, which is an evil in this country right now, regardless of where it comes from. I don't care where it comes from. Foreign money should not be able to affect local and national politics in America. And I respect Massie for not taking it. I respect him for his positions on the Epstein files. I respect him for his protection of the First, Second, and Fourth Amendment when this administration has been hell-bent on trying to gut it, trying to circumvent it, trying to get the Supreme Court to do it, stacking the Supreme Court to try to gut it. I respect Massie, who votes with this administration, by the way, 90 to 95% of the time. He votes Republican. I respect him for taking a stand on issues that matter, that will be here long past my lifetime and his lifetime. And like I said, I donated to the guy a few weeks ago and I got no horse in that race. Right. But I absolutely like the morals that are there. I'm glad the good people of Kentucky are starting to see through some of the BS and are no longer just listening to what the guy in charge or the gal in charge is telling them, because clearly lying is not above any of these politicians on both sides' moral compass at
no,
all.
Sir.
Yeah. And yeah, that's my rant on that. Do we want to talk? I mean, it's just more of the same, right? The Alexander brothers.
I think it's worth a quick mention. Sure.
Yep. Yeah. You want to give them the overview? Real estate tycoons with, like I said, deep ties to the Trumps, Ivanka, Jared Kushner, who negotiates peace for us in the Middle East, even though it's not appointed to anything. I'll let you take it from there, Nick.
No. I'm not intimately familiar, but I read a little bit about it a couple of months ago when it was first coming up, and then they just got convicted this week, right? So there's three brothers. Let me get their names right here. There's Oren and Alon, who are twins. And then there's Tal. So there's three brothers, Oren, Alon, and Tal. They're 38 and 39 years old. And the first line of the article I'm looking at says, they just got convicted after a 5-week trial over accusations that they drugged and raped scores of women, that they had dazzled with their wealth and their opulent lifestyle. Sounds very familiar to what was happening in the Epstein network and all those that we know are involved in it.
And they were mentioned in the Epstein network, by the
correct.
Way.
Correct. Absolutely. I was going to get there in a second. They were most certainly mentioned in the Epstein files, which we're told and back to Thomas Massie, was tweeting this week that, you know, we were told that there was no evidence or, you know, inclusion of folks in the Epstein files that led us to believe there was convictable sex trafficking, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, these guys just got convicted that were in the Epstein files.
I think on 15 charges of it, by the way. It wasn't like a willy-nilly, like, she was 17 and he was 19 and whatever. No. It wasn't that, folks. It was straight up rape.
Yeah, well, at least one of them was underage 17. But yeah, and some of them were famous or quasi-famous individuals. Like, there's a woman on a show called Million Dollar Listings Los Angeles. Her name is Tracy Tudor. That's a show that's on the Bravo channel. She was one of the ladies who was raped, and she allowed her name to be used.
Too, because it takes a lot for a sexual assault victim to be allowed their name to be used in such a public forum and case like this one. So applaud her bravery, because that is tough, man.
100%. There was even a daughter of a billionaire. Let me get her name right before I go on. Maybe she didn't let her name be used. What else? Yeah, she was the daughter of a billionaire. And she was like, look, like, I don't want your money. I'm the daughter of a billionaire, but you raped me. And the tools that you used to do that was your money. And so I want your money to be taken away from you. And that's the same, across this network, these Alexander brothers, and across the Epstein network, using that power. Remember what I said earlier, the ends is the power, right? Using that power and wealth to make people feel small, to intimidate people, and to do things with them what you want to without any consequences. And that's sort of what the judge says in the sentencing. He didn't mention Epstein by name, but he said, you know, in this country, we've gone too far and too long allowing sexual predators to get off, and I'm not having it. But there was one other thing I wanted to say. Oh, what struck me was everybody knew. Just like the Epstein case, right, where you had Mr. McCain's wife out there saying, everybody knew, like, this is on video, right? There's a video of Sidney McCain saying, everybody knew what was going on with Jeffrey Epstein. Same thing here. One of the subheads in this NPR article is, this lawsuit exposes an open secret in the real estate world. Like, everybody knew. Actors were having parties. Zac Efron is mentioned in this article as having a party in his Manhattan apartment where these gentlemen were in attendance. And everyone knew what was going on, is what that Tracy Tudor lady was saying, who's on the Bravo Million Dollar Listings Los Angeles show. And harken back to Harvey Weinstein, for example. Everybody knew what was going on. After it came out, we're told everybody knew. But no one's got the balls or the chutzpah to do anything about it while it's actively going on.
Yeah, and just to be factual, because I think we might be looking at the same article, they were found guilty of 19 charges. There were 19 charges, guilty of all 19, and they were accused of raping over 60 women. 60. I will repeat what I've said often with sexual assault victims. That's 60 that came out and accused them of it, folks. If you think it stops at 60, I guarantee you there were far more than 60. So I hope reciprocity treats them accordingly. I wish that for all sexual predators. I hope they get exactly no more and no less than what they deserve and have put out in their time away. And again, these are individuals that have all of the resources and connections in the world, and even they weren't able to beat these charges. So again, the optimist in me says, maybe, you know, the words of the judge give me some hope. Maybe the tide is turning even just a little bit, where some accountability or more accountability is going to start being, you know, produced and handed down. And who knows, maybe that will lead to a trend where people get what they deserve, and it doesn't matter, you know, what your background or income class or social status is. And I'm not saying that's going to happen from one day to the other, folks, but I am hopeful that, in the words of Rudy Havenstein last week, right? But maybe we can get a little justice. Can we get a little justice? Can we start with a little justice, right? And add to that. So good on that judge, good on that jury. And you know, my condolences, obviously, to all of the women that were victims of these nasty, nasty human beings.
Yes, sir. Until then,
all right.
I'll keep wearing my Bizarro World hat.
It's going to stay bizarro, so I don't think that one's ever going out of style. Anything else you want to get out your chest before we get into the premium portion of the podcast? It'll be a quick premium portion of the podcast for the simple reason that we talked about volatility and what to do with this volatility, and sometimes the best thing is to do not a lot of things. So let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. Mr. Hodge, I got some wedding planning to do and
get it.
All of that. Anything that you want to add?
I believe you also have some Bizarro World t-shirts in your mailbox if you haven't received them already.
I should go do that. It's been a day or two since we checked that mailbox. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 356th episode of our weekly therapy session called Investing in Bizarro World. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. We will see you next week. Take care.
See ya.